Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Queen of Steeplechase Park by David Ciminello. Narrated by Elizabeth Ashby. No one like her. Had William Randolph Hearst known about her, he would have inked her onto the front pages of his newspapers, directly above the banner headlines barking about the war crawling across Europe. Walter Winchell would have broadcast about her on This Is Your World. They would have told you how beautiful she was, how men dropped in front of her and howled, how Einstein created a brand new theory, and how Freud folded his cards after she lit one of his cigars. Hollywood could have made her a great big star. She would have taken Betty Davis and wrung that bug-eyed ham bone dry. King Kong would have let go of Fay Wray, dropped that dizzy dame those 102 Empire State stories just so he could hold her in his gargantuan hand. Glenn Miller would have raised his baton and crooned, "Come on, baby, front my band. You can swing, I know you can." Pity was never a song she chose to sing. Her anthems were always "Shoo Shoo Boogie Boo" and "All of Me." When she Coney Island cooch danced, air raid sirens rang, lucky strikes lit themselves, and palm trees sprouted out of Coney Island sand. After her cooking spirit swooped in, meatballs were never the same. Everyone wanted to taste her tomatoes and dip their bread in her Sunday gravy. Had he met her, David O. Selznick would have ceased his search for his silly Scarlett O'Hara and cast her in a Technicolor epic all her own. Fiddle-dee-dee. Frankly, my dears, there was no one like her. Coney Island, 1938. She stands in front of the roiling Brooklyn Sea, alone, a devastated girl of 18. But she is timeless, ageless. She is a queen. Almost 2 years after having lost her baby, not long after losing the love of her life, her gorgeous Jesus boy, her hero, her Coney Island king, she rises up from the December sand, battered and shivering and weak. Behind her, the amusement park rides sleep, tucked and tarped and snoring. Before the frozen day she had lost her king, death was something she'd only experienced with the messy slaughter of dirty backyard animals, chickens squawking, goats bleeding, pigs screaming, like her broken heart, flapping and jerking and bleeding and ready to stop beating, forever. Her toes touch the frigid water. The starving ocean opens its salty mouth and bares its foamy teeth. Her name. On the first day of first grade at St. Anthony's Catholic Grammar School in Clifton, New Jersey, in our good Lord's year of 1926, every immigrant student in Sister Mary Cara Malloy's classroom got a good old U.S. of A. American name. Elvira became Ellen, Giacomo became Joe, Igor became Eric, Rosaria became Rose, and so on.
"And what is your name, please?"
the ruler-wielding nun, an odious old penguin, asked 6-year-old Italian factory mouse Belladonna Marie Donato. Bella's mama had given her the name Belladonna, beautiful girl, because when she was born, she was so goddamn ugly. Her papa sometimes called her Gabadost because she was so goddamn stubborn and strong-willed. She was also fiercely intelligent and incredibly independent. Full of the guile and charm of a Sicilian folktale fox, she had the fortitude and strength of 10 Italian elephants. She could charm the socks off rocks.
"My name is Belladonna Marie."
"No, it isn't."
"Yes, it is."
The fierce-looking old Irish nun, one of a bitter baker's dozen farm down from some ancient abbey in Singac, slammed her ruler onto Bella's desk with the force of one of Lucifer's better demons. The entire class jumped out of their skirts and knickers.
Young miss, we do not talk back in God's classroom.
The penguin's roomy eyes traveled up to the fractured ceiling like she was searching for something.
Now, let me see.
She tapped her ruler on Bella's desk while squinting up through the cracks. No one was breathing.
Barbara! She suddenly screamed. From now on, in God's classrooms, your name will be Barbara Mary.
She extended her skeletal hand and smiled, baring green, tobacco-stained teeth.
Now thank me and kiss Christ's ring.
No one, except maybe Belladonna Marie Donato's papa, was ever able to make Bella do anything. The little girl crossed her arms.
No. What did you say to me?
I said no.
The stunned nun's feathers puffed out of her habit. Her beak snapped open.
Barbara Mary, if you do not thank me and kiss Christ's ring this very instant, you will be one very sorry little Italian monkey.
Vaffanculo, vecchio pazzo pinguino irlandese.
What did you say to me? Fuck you, you crazy old Irish penguin.
All 27 students, all the Stevies, the Charlies, the Carols, the Harrys, and the Shelleys, bolted to the outskirts of the room and started praying.
You greasy little roach of a wop!
The old bird's hands flew, but quick as a whip, Bella ducked and plowed into the nun's wool-sheathed shins. Teeth sank, warm blood bled.
In the holy name of Jesus Christ, let go of me!
While the students stomped and cheered, the Italian monkey and the old Irish penguin flailed up one side of the classroom and toppled down the next. They plowed through chairs and flipped desks. They slammed into the blackboard and tumbled out the door. They rolled together like a two-headed, four-armed, four-legged bowling ball down a long, waxed corridor. They bounced down 37 marble stairs, splintered through two more doors, pinwheeled past the school's front offices, and crashed into Reverend Monsignor Teschio's formidable desk. That's when Bella unlocked her jaw, stood up, spit out a mouthful of wool, and wiped her lips.
My name is Belladonna Marie Donato, she panted, and I am not kissing anything.
Her cooking spirit. The day Bella's soul-tortured mama, Lucia Medina Donato, gave birth to her final child, little Luigi, she threw the steaming baby into Bella's 7-year-old arms.
You have to be the mama now, she spit.
Hair crazing, eyes blazing, she grabbed her daughter by the ears and yanked her close.
I never loved your papa, she hoarsely whispered. I only ever loved Dino Scarabino. That's it.
Then she took a deep breath, stopped talking forever, and never left her bed. Manolo Antonio Donato, Bella's too proud papa and the always tired night watchman at the Robertson Scale factory where the family lived, went his own kind of crazy. He had a smiling scar that started in the right corner of his mouth and sliced up his cheek, but he always looked mean.
Who's gonna cook? What the fuck are we gonna eat?
I'm starving!
Bella's big brother, the firstborn, Manolo Antonio Jr., hollered.
We're hungry, too.
Bella's sisters, pretty Concetta Regina and addle-brained Lucrezia Angelina, screamed. The two girls had tried like hell to cook, but they destroyed everything. Chickens met charred ends. Pigs were boiled down to grizzle. Tomatoes never stopped bleeding. After cursing her life and the world God created, Bella wrapped and plopped her yowling baby brother into a makeshift wooden wagon. She crossed herself, dragged it out of the factory complex, and pulled it 4 long blocks to Lo Monaco's corner market while singing, Lullaby, lullaby, lullaby ooh, who will I give this baby to? Lullaby, lullaby, lullaby ee, I will keep this baby for me.
I gotta make a big pot of tomato gravy for my starving family, Bella yelled over the infant's wailing as she yanked the wobbling wagon into the store's warm belly.
The owner's giant wife, Big Betty LaMonaco, lumbered out from behind the register. She towered over the little girl like a Coney Island elephant lording over a mouse.
What's your name?
Belladonna Marie Donato.
From the Robertson Scale Factory. What's your baby's name?
This is my mama's baby, but she gave him to me. I'm his Bella Mama. His name is Little Luigi.
Where is your mama?
She's in bed.
What is she doing there?
She's got the Great Depression.
What about your papa?
He says if I don't make something for my family to eat right away, he's going to kill me.
Big Betty knew little ones in need of an angel when she saw them. She lifted the bawling infant out of the wagon and grabbed Bella by the hand. The shock of it made Bella wince. But the little girl's arm tingled in a way it had never tingled before, and she decided she liked it.
You come with me.
The colossal woman tugged Bella past Big Bud, who was busy butchering behind the meat counter.
Where are we going?
She marched her through the crowded store and into a sprawling kitchen, where bright white Jersey sunshine blasted through billowing lace curtains, where a monster stove crouched warm and ready to roar, where a weathered butcher block stood warped and clean, where a vased bouquet of fresh basil rested in the middle of a linened table, lush and inviting, where a radiolo was softly crooning Paul Whiteman's My Blue Heaven. Bella never wanted to leave.
You really live here?
When was the last time this baby had something in its belly?
I don't know.
Mary, Mother of God, help me, please.
Muttering the Lord's Prayer, Big Betty rummaged through overstuffed drawers until she found an empty glass bottle and an old rubber nipple. As she boiled them, she poured water into another pot, added unsweetened evaporated milk and Karo syrup, and snapped a flame on under it. Once the mixture cooled down, she funneled it into the bottle and thrust it into Bella's hand.
Shove the nipple in that baby's mouth and feed him.
Luigi suckled like a starved calf. The bottle drained fast.
Now rub and pat his back.
While Bella did as she was told, Big Betty gathered several mason jars of summer-ripened tomatoes, canisters of spices, a softball-sized onion, a ring of garlic, and a rough-edged wedge of pecorino cheese. After carefully placing the burped baby in a soft pile of dish towels, she clutched her big chest.
Sometimes I have a little trouble breathing, she said.
She pinched off a small chunk of the cheese, popped it into her mouth, and worked it around. After a moment, she took a deep breath.
There. Now I feel better.
With renewed strength, she slammed a thick cutting board onto the kitchen table in front of the basil.
Garlic heads, always smash them to loosen the skin, then pop out the cloves.
She handed Bella a wooden mallet.
We need at least 10 of them.
As Bella got to work, Big Betty poured a heaping glug of Montebologna olive oil, the olive oil of Italian kings, into a cauldron-sized pot she had slapped onto the stove. Then she took a healthy swig and patted her bountiful breasts.
Keeps the insides greased. Keeps the old clock ticking.
After frying the garlic cloves and tossing in a pinch of chili flakes, Big Betty had Bella hand-crush the tomatoes and throw them into the pot, too. Then she grabbed a huge handful of basil from the vase on the table and thrust it into Bella's face.
Take a good, deep sniff, she said. That's it. Drink it in. Ain't it delicious?
It made Bella sneeze, but she loved the fragrant spiciness of it. After they chopped and added the pungent leaves, Big Betty ordered Bella to measure the spices, one at a time, with her hands, and toss them in, too. Salt, pepper, oregano. She didn't tell her how much, but she watched carefully.
That's it! You got it!
The giant woman gripped Bella's little chin in her big hand and squeezed.
The cooking spirit is inside you! Can you feel it?
The only thing Bella felt was her starving stomach grumbling.
No,
she said through squashed lips.
Don't worry, you will, believe me,
the big woman said as she drizzled a spoonful of honey into the simmering tomato gravy.
My secret ingredient. Don't tell anybody.
I won't, I promise. As the tomato gravy sent its Italian perfume into the room, Big Betty plated a fistful of chocolate biscotti. Then she sat Bella at the kitchen table and asked her about her home. We live in the caretaker's house at the Robertson Scale Factory.
Tell me about your family.
With a mouthful of chocolate crumbs, Bella gave Big Betty the rundown.
My oldest brother is Manolo Antonio Jr., but we call him Tony. He's 10. He likes boxing. Sometimes he tries to box me.
Don't let him do that.
When he does, I grab him by his coglioni and squeeze until he begs for mercy.
Bravissimo.
I also have two sisters, Conchetta Regina, we call her Connie, she's very pretty, and Lucrezia Angelina, we call her Lulu, she's stupid. They are 9 and 6. I will be 8 next week.
I wish you a happy birthday.
Grazie.
Prego. When did your mama get the Great Depression?
Right after she pushed out little Luigi. She always used to cook and clean, Bella continued. Now she stays in bed all day and she doesn't speak.
Not a word?
Not nothing.
Big Betty compressed her lips and nodded with a deep understanding.
Before your mama got the Great Depression, was she happy?
Now Bella compressed her lips.
Did she teach you how to cook?
My mama never taught me anything.
What about your papa?
Memories of Manolo tossing Bella over the waves in the Jersey Ocean while her bitter mama watched from the beach flooded over her.
Papa, catch me!
He called her his little tomato. This was before Lucia's knife flew, before little Luigi came, before Manolo Donato's tomato garden became his mistress, his only friend, his everything. When he wasn't guarding the factory grounds at night or asleep in his basement cot when the world was light, he tended on his Sicilian tomatoes with a shovel or a pruner or a spade. He coddled them and cooed to them. He entered them in every carnival, county fair, and festival contest, and usually won first place. So ripe. So tasty.
My papa always makes me wash his feet, Bella whispered to Big Betty.
What do you mean?
I have to do it after he works all night guarding the factory and always after he does his gardening.
In the murky shadows of the living room, Manolo would take a seat on his throne of an armchair like a king. Then Bella would slosh in with a bowl loaded with warm water and place it on the floor. She would kneel in front of his feet, untie and remove his shoes, then peel off his socks to reveal toes cracked and moldy, onioned bunions, red and mean.
So smelly.
Then she would begin washing. She'd done this routine daily since she was 3. Never Lulu, never Connie.
Only me.
That's disgusting.
Bella didn't tell Big Betty she sometimes spit in the water before carrying it in, that she sometimes squatted over the bowl and peed.
My papa hates me.
For a while, neither of them said a thing. Then, Big Betty LaMonaco took little Belladonna Marie Donato's hands in hers.
You listen to me. If the world gets bad, if Manolo Jr. tries to box you, if your papa makes you wash his stinking feet, call upon the holy hands of your cooking spirit. The cooking spirit will fix it.
Bella wanted to believe the big woman. She really did.
Can the cooking spirit fix the Great Depression?
The moment of silence that followed was seismic. It was Vesuvius before the deluge. Tephra and sulfur gases gathered above their heads.
The cooking spirit can fix anything.
You mean like the Holy Ghost? Like Jesus?
More like a guardian angel. One that will be with you always. Capisce?
No. Non capisco.
Non preoccuparti. Don't worry. You'll understand soon, my little darling.
No one had ever called Bella darling before. At first, she wanted to punch the jumbo woman and bite her in her mammoth shins. Then she decided
maybe she might hug and kiss her instead. After the gravy finished cooking, Big Betty dipped her wooden spoon into the pot and gave Bella a taste. When the sweet tang entered the scrappy little girl's mouth, the floor left her feet. It tasted better than the chocolate biscotti. It tasted better than anything. Her insides swooned, her heart crooned, and she flew all the way up to heaven.
Now do you feel the cooking spirit?
Yes!
Of course you do.
After Bella dropped back down to the floor, Big Betty covered and loaded the pot of tomato gravy into her wobbly wagon, along with 2 pounds of dry spaghetti, the entire wedge of pecorino cheese, 10 tins of White House evaporated milk, and a snoozing little Luigi.
Now go and feed the rest of your family.
Bella wrapped her small arms around the gigantic woman's enormous waist. Then she kissed her pillowy stomach. She wanted to say, I love you, but she couldn't say those words. Not yet.
Come back soon,
Big Betty hollered as she pushed Bella and her wagon out the door of the store.
Next time, I'll teach you how to make my big mama's magic meatballs. Meatballs saved my life once, the big woman sang. And someday, they're gonna save yours too.
Big Betty LaMonaco's Tomato Gravy. Inherited from Big Betty's big mama, Claudia Signorelli. This recipe carried Bella in its delicious Italian arms for her entire life. It was the Sicilian fuel that lit the fire that simmered in her bodacious heart until the day she died. You will have to keep reading for the magic meatball recipe. 2 large, half-pound cans of good-quality Italian plum tomatoes, 3 to 4 tablespoons of Montebologna olive oil, the olive oil of Italian kings, 8 to 10 whole cloves garlic, skinned, a nice pinch or two of red chili flakes, a few dashes of dried oregano, kosher salt to taste, fresh ground black pepper to taste, 1 teaspoon raw honey, a healthy handful of fresh basil, chopped. 1. Separate and skin the garlic cloves. Be sure and keep them whole. 2. Place canned tomatoes in a large bowl and use your hands to squash them until smashed real good, preferably while singing My Blue Heaven. 3. Put olive oil in a big pot. Take a healthy swig to keep everything ticking properly. Tilt the pot on a flame to create a healthy puddle in its bottom crook and fry cloves until golden. Don't burn them. 4. Right the pot and add red chili flakes and let them sizzle for 30 seconds while muttering the Lord's Prayer. 5. Add hand-crushed tomatoes to the pot. 6. Add dried oregano, salt, black pepper, honey, and stir. Let the holy hands of the cooking spirit guide you. 7. Add chopped basil after drinking in the fragrance. Be sure and take a deep sniff. 8. Bring the gravy to a rolling boil while occasionally stirring with a wooden spoon, preferably your mama's. 9. Lower flame, set lid on pot, and let the gravy simmer for a few hours. Play some cards. Eat some biscotti, sing a few songs, dance around the kitchen. 10. When the gravy is done, when it tastes better than candy, thank the cooking spirit and serve tossed with your favorite pasta immediately. 11.
Buon appetito, mangiare bene, stare bene, delizioso.
The tasting. When Manny Donato tasted the tomato gravy Bella wheeled home, he was astounded.
Who made this?
I did.
Don't you lie to me.
I'm not lying. The man was silent for a full minute. Then a small smile played across his lips.
I don't fucking believe this.
Bella thought she was going to get a sweet kiss. Her papa's eyes brimmed with tears. He quickly rubbed them away. Then he smacked his stunned daughter to the floor and vanished into his basement sanctuary. After the rest of the family finished eating, they scraped their plates, they slurped up everything. Bella carried a bowl of gravied spaghetti into her mama's room. She pulled a chair next to the silent woman's bed and proceeded to feed her with a twirling fork and spoon. Maybe the cooking spirit would swoop in. Maybe her mama would take a bite and start speaking again.
"I made this with Big Betty LaMonaco," Bella proudly whispered. "Do you like it? It's full of the cooking spirit."
Lucia took the food into her mouth. She slowly chewed and swallowed without saying a word.
"Don't worry, Mama," Bella said as she continued to feed the mute woman. "I'm going to take care of you."
Silence.
"I'm going to take care of little Luigi. I'm going to take care of the whole family. I'm going to take care of everything."
More silence. Could be Big Betty was full of shit, pieno di merda, just like everybody.
"Mama, are you ever going to talk again? Mama, why won't you speak to me? Mama, speak to me, please!"
Santa Lucia. In the Sicilian seaside village of Siracusa, in the summer of 1916, men and boys circled Lucia Medina Cicolina like a flock of horny vultures. They were only after one thing.
"Fly after one of my sisters. You don't want me," Lucia always used to sing.
She had 9 beautiful sisters, much to her doting papa's everlasting dismay. At first, the randy birds swarmed around the other Cicolina girls, but they always flapped back to the one with the corn silk hair and emerald green eyes. Lucia Cicolina, the Sicilian prize. Some of the suitors offered slaughtered animals as gifts. A few wrote poems. Some sang songs. The handsomest, a mandolin-strumming merchant from Catania by way of Napoli named Manolo Antonio Donato, presented a bushel of the most succulent tomatoes Lucia had ever tasted. While her lips dripped with juice and seeds, he regaled her with tales of a place he called America on the other side of the sea. He told her America was paradise, the promised land.
"The streets are paved with gold. The rivers run with milk. The ponds are flooded with honey."
Lucia laughed at him.
"Oh, really?
I am going to sail there and plant my tomatoes. I'm going to be rich and raise a great big happy American family. You'll see."
He strummed his mandolin and tried to seduce her with a honeyed rendition of Santa Lucia. Birds fainted out of the sky. Goats cried. The wind sighed. But Lucia felt nothing. Not that she didn't try. One by one, she sniffed and kissed each of her suitors on the lips. Too salty. Too nasty. Too stinky. Too stiff.
"Soon I will have to choose a suitor for you," Lucia's papa tearfully professed.
"Love is for idiots," Lucia sneered. "I won't have any of them."
When true love finally found Lucia Medina Cicolina, it took her completely by surprise. It happened while she was picking cherries in a crooked tree at sunrise. Reaching for a succulent-looking cluster, her foot slipped and she dropped into the arms of the most beautiful creature she had ever seen. A face full of Italian sunshine, eyes the color of the Sicilian sea. One kiss was all it took. Lucia had never tasted anything so sweet.
"Who are you? What's your name?"
"I am Dino Scarabino."
"I am Lucia Medina Cicolina."
Together, they flew down to the ocean and splashed their way into the waves. They fed each other cherries on the beach. They climbed the rocks along the coast and made love in the cliffside caves. To seal the deal, they danced into Siracusa's only Studio Fotografico, hand...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?